In this half hour, Gardening with Ed Lawrence, the live web forum starting at cbc.ca/Ontario Today. And we are going to settle right now the debate that has sprouted on our Twitter feed here on the airwaves about neem oil and whether gardeners can use it as a pesticide. If you have a question about neem oil, you can call us right now, 1-888-817-8995. It's our first priority because we have an authority on this standing by from Health Canada. Now, some people cook with neem oil. It's popular for frying in Indian cuisine. It's also found in some soaps, and gardeners do use it to control pests. Even Ed Lawrence routinely recommends it, but conflicting information on neem oil as a pesticide. So coming right up again, Health Canada on this, our number 1-888-817-8995. The Twitter handle is at CBC Ontario Today. So a lot going on with gardening here. Lindsay Hansen, our first guest, is with a branch of Health Canada, the Pest Management Regulatory Agency. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Just to contextualize for our audience, what is your specialty? Is it toxicology?
My background is in toxicology. I work here at the agency in Ottawa.
Okay, so for all the uninitiated, what exactly is neem oil?
Neem oil is an oil that's derived from, usually it's a cold pressing process. So it's derived from the nuts from a neem tree. The neem tree is not native to North America. It's found in the Indian subcontinent in India, and that's where most of it originates. I believe the tree does grow in some other tropical countries as well.
And you know something of it, or what it's supposed to apparently do as a pesticide?
I don't know a lot about it in terms of a proposed use as a pesticide, because just to clear up, there are actually no registered neem oil products in Canada right now.
So what does that mean, not registered as a pesticide?
That's right.
Okay, because people can buy it. This is a confusion. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. You're with Health Canada.
Right.
What is the status of neem oil in Canada as a pesticide?
So there are, as I've stated, there are no registered pest control products in Canada. So what that means is that we have not had a submission where we've been able to evaluate the data to make a determination if that product would be safe to use, either by the people, or would it be safe for the environment. So there are no registered pest control products with neem. We do have one product that has one specific chemical out of neem oil. And just a little bit of background, so neem oil, I could have clarified that further. Neem oil itself is really a complex mixture of chemicals, and really everything is made up of chemicals, right?
So yeah, even natural ones, you mean, yes.
Well, that's it. So from a toxicology point of view, we really make no distinction between whether a chemical is naturally derived or was human made by human hands. So when we look at those chemicals, we have to be absolutely sure that if we're going to allow those into the marketplace for its use as a pest control product, that it would be safe for humans and the environment.
Okay, so help us. You said one is registered, and this. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So to go back to that, there's one particular chemical. It's kind of a complex name. It's referred to as azadirachtin. Its commercial name is triazin. So there's one product, one chemical that's been derived from neem oil that we have registered as a commercial product in Canada, but it's a very specific use. Your listeners might be familiar with the problems we're having with ash trees and the emerald ash borer. The triazin product is used as an injection product on those trees. So it's a very specific use, and it's helped to control the emerald ash borer in some cases.
Well, this explains something then, because here in Ontario, the Class 11 pesticides, so this chart, it's listed there, but it is for licensed exterminators.
That's right.
Okay.
So to use a commercial product in Canada as a pest control product, you have to be certified and registered.
So something also was flipping around on our Twitter, a note from Flowers Canada, from Health Canada, saying that would no longer tolerate the use of neem-based leaf shine products. This is going back a few years.
Right. Going back to about 2011, 2012, What we were seeing was a number of these neem-based products appearing in retails. And these were unregistered products that were being sold for as pest control products. And essentially, under the Pest Control Products Act, that's a violation of the Act. The reason is that we have to be absolutely sure that if something is registered, that it's not going to present any unacceptable risk to humans or the environment. So what we were seeing back in 2011 is a number of these products in retails that we had to take some compliance action. And in many cases, that meant contacting the retails through an educational process or phone calls to make them aware that these were not registered pest control products.
Okay, so like that's a big company, obviously, Flowers Canada. They took it to heart. It's posted again. People can find that. But I can tell you, after we had this discussion on air, we've heard from people. I'm not going to say who this is, but it's, you know, someone in, I'm just looking at the email now, one of them, someone with a soil amendment business who is bringing in a pallet of neem cake oil and Karenja oil. So I don't know what neem cake is, but is it not in the same family? Is this just falling through the cracks? Because I think people are quite confused.
Right. I mean, there is some difficulty that in that the product can still be sourced, I guess, in that a person can potentially import it. And it depends on what they're going to be using it for. From our perspective, from the Pest Management Regulatory Agency, if they're making any sort of claim that it's going to be used to control or suppress a pest, for example, then it needs to be registered in Canada.
So how could you, like as a toxicologist with Health Canada, this, you know, people can buy neem oil in an Indian food store, let's say, and, you know, it's used commonly in frying, and if they're using some of that in their garden, is that an issue?
Well, you know, I'm not aware entirely of the other uses that might be out there for neem oil, but I can say from that perspective, and this goes back to the toxicology side of things, that indeed it's quite a famous saying that the dose makes the poison. So when we're looking at products that are used for pest control purposes, you're usually looking at chemicals in a higher concentration that would have some sort of impact, whether it be against an insect or a weed or a fungus. So it would have to have some activity to control that pest. If there are other uses for a product, potentially at smaller amounts, it could be found in other products like that. I know that there are products that have it in small amounts. Those would be regulated under another part of Health Canada that looks at it from the food and drug regulation side, from the cosmetic side, to make sure that that product is also safe to use.
Okay. I think this has gone some distance, I hope. I realize, so if for the status right now, nothing is registered, which does mean for any kind of, let's say, a pesticide grade of neem oil, it is not available in
That's
Canada.
Right.
Okay.
It's not registered in Canada right now.
All right, Lindsay Hansen, thanks for your time.
No problem.
We've had Lindsay Hansen on the line with us, a toxicologist with Health Canada, the Pest Management Regulatory Agency. It's interesting. I've got here, too, a statement on neem oil from, it's a collaboration, actually. It's from the U.S., National Pesticide Information Center, which is an agreement between Oregon State University and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And it goes into some detail about neem oil. Interestingly, it does talk about it being practically non-toxic to birds, mammals, bees, and plants. It's important to remember that insects must eat the treated plant in order to be affected. Therefore, bees and other pollinators are not likely to be harmed. It talks about how it may actually affect more the hormone cycles and the laying of eggs. So that's our attempt to give you a final word on neem oil. A reminder that online right now at cbc.ca/Ontario Today, there is a web form, a number of gardening experts, fantastic gardening experts, and of course, our Ed Lawrence in the Ottawa studio having listened. I don't know if you want to make a quick comment or you still want to, what are you going to recommend to people, Ed Lawrence, based on that?
I can tell them that it's not a registered pesticide, much like the soap. And the fact is, Rita, until somebody wants to pay to have it registered, that won't happen. And it's a good thing we have these regulations. I completely agree. However, soap falls into the same boat. Now, I know somebody is paid to have soap registered as a pesticide, so they can make the claim on their bottle, but it costs them a lot of money, and it's much more expensive than buying
Okay.
Some hand soap. It's not that soap is not toxic to us. I mean, if we breathe that spray, it has been registered in the U.S., and the products are used. And there's a difference there as well. The azadirachtin, that's a good mouthful, is one component of neem oil. But when it's taken away, now you have a hydrophobic oil that is used without the most toxic of the ingredients, as far as we know.
Okay.
So it's a long debate.
But it also clarifies things, because people were seeing that, you know, it was or wasn't. So the in Ontario, it is allowed in limited circumstances, one product,
yes.
And it's used specifically
it's
as an injection for ash borer. Let's go to the phones. We didn't actually get any calls on neem oil, but I know that people are interested, so I'm glad that we actually had that authority on the line with us. Joe, go ahead. Ed Lawrence is all yours. What would you like some help with?
Okay, I'm not hearing you very well, but I'll keep talking and hope you can hear me.
We've got
I have a couple of pine trees, 50-foot tall pine trees that have lost a huge amount of needles this spring. As I'm watching the wind now, they're blowing off the trees. Is it just because they are needing water, or might it be something else?
Well, it's a very good question. I'm glad you put this out. This is normal cycle. Pine trees, like all evergreens, actually do drop needles. Yes, they're evergreen in that they always have green foliage or needles on them, but it does die off, it dries up, it falls off. Now, in a stressful period, a bit more is allowed to drop. So if they're particularly dry or it's particularly hot, we tend to notice a bit more, because the stuff that is borderline in terms of dropping or being let go by the tree gets released. So it's gone and down it comes, and it would have been going anyway. But it is indicative when it comes later in the spring, this being the last 6 hours or so now, Rita, of spring, when it comes later, we worry a bit more, because it's usually indicative of some stress on the plant. And you're right, it's the heat and moisture stress.
Thank you for reminding us all. Tomorrow is going to be the longest day of the year, right?
Well, yeah, it starts at 6:34 tonight, I believe.
Perfect. John, you're next in Toronto. Go right ahead.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Well, thank you.
You know, I have another question. Hearing about neem oil, I actually have a few ashes in my backyard that I'm having treated for emerald ash borer.
Yep.
The last 2 years, I've had them treated 2 years in a row. It's a new approach to it, I think. But this year, the results in two of them are disappointing.
Yes.
So I think I'm probably going to lose them this year or next year. I have to make a decision on that. But one of them, a large one, still looks pretty good, though.
And is this what you wanted to ask Ed about?
No, actually, I had a wisteria question.
Okay. Well, if you can keep the treatment up on the large one, take the gamble, keep it up. I have heard that there's actually some residual effect after a period of being used. It didn't make a lot of sense to me, but if you can keep it up and it's still, my fear is that it's not as effective as we thought, and trees that are being treated are still coming down with the symptoms, and the ash borers are getting away inside. It is a stomach poison, as was mentioned, so they're actually eating that cambium layer where it's circulating. So, sorry, let's go to wisteria.
Okay. I planted a wisteria in front of my house about 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do much for 5 years. Then it started blooming. The last 4 or 5 years, it hasn't bloomed at all.
Okay, and have things around changed? Have you got a big tree around? Is it getting less light?
It is getting less light. There's a crab in front of it,
okay,
which reduces the light somewhat. But it's around to the side of the house as well, so it's also on a western-facing wall.
Okay.
And it still gets full light over on that side. But even one of my neighbors has a wisteria that's in full sun, and even it hasn't bloomed in the last few years.
Okay, next question. Are either of you feeding your wisteria?
I did for a while, but I stopped doing that because I heard it wasn't a good thing.
That's good. Okay, and it probably needs a bit of a trim back as well. They can get pretty rampant as you let them go. But be patient, no feeding, good watering. Don't let it get stressed out. It will produce those flower buds. It'll carry them through the winter successfully, and you'll see them next year. Up here, generally, the bud doesn't make it through the winter, so it's pretty rare when we see wisteria in flower, Rita.
Oh, is that true? That's in Toronto that John's calling
from. In Toronto, it comes more frequently. That's more protected.
Okay, Connie, you're in Orillia. Go right ahead.
Yes, mine is chint bugs. I get them every year, and the wee man won't even come anymore because he can't seem to have good results.
Okay. You know those
kind
lovely
of bugs?
Chinch bugs?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Those lovely little buff-colored moths that flit over the lawn at sunset, you know, just in the evening. What we fail to recognize is that the trap doors are open and they're dropping eggs all over the lawn. So how do we control them? The most effective way with chinch bugs, I have found over time and talking to people, is to get some first, a thorough watering of the lawn, so you've got at least 60%+ moisture content in there. Then you water the whole lawn, applying the nematodes which attack white grubs. This is a small white grub that comes in and eats up your grass, and you know what it looks like when it's done. If you've got the nematodes in the soil, and you have to water them in after you've applied them in a watering can, because they are so small, they actually swim, Rita, in the water molecules that are between the soil particles in the soil. But the good part is they eat white grubs. Go in, lay your eggs, white grub dies, more nematodes come along, clean up more white grubs. So it's the one thing that works pretty darned effectively.
Okay.
And if a commercial applicator has given up on you,
that's sad.
It's time to go
this route
with nematodes.
So Connie, for you and others, remember at cbc.ca/Ontario Today, you can download a podcast. So if you're driving around, you want to hear this again with some of the instructions. And a reminder, there is a link for a live gardening web chat that is ongoing right now. It will last till 1:30. Some great people available at your fingertips who have a variety of kind of expertise on, let's say, how to attract wildlife, observe wildlife, what not to plant, orchids, large trees, exotics, and so on. So four others available to you, along with Ed Lawrence, live in the Ottawa studio. Doug, where are you calling us from?
I'm from Watauga Beach.
What would you like some help with?
Oh, thank you. Ed, I have a 6-year-old maple tree in my front garden, and it's well over 20-odd feet. And this spring, it started to seep brown liquid out of the bark. And it's bleached the bark as it goes down the bark. I had a friend of mine who's a Toastmaster with me, and he's a nursery guy. And he came and had a look, and he said, oh, I can see what's happened, because where the trunk goes up, it splits into two branches.
Yep.
There's a crack about 6 inches from the V down to where this brown mark is.
Yeah.
And he says, what's happened is your tree is starting to split. And to remedy this, I suggest you put a steel rod in there and bolt it up so it doesn't break.
And it will heal over on that split line. So you'll get callus tissue on both sides of the split growing out, and then it will wrap around itself. Now, it's always going to be a weak joint, and eventually the threaded rod nuts and bolts that you put on there to bolt it together will actually grow in. It's good to mark where the heck it is, because if down the line somebody decides to cut that down with a chainsaw, there's a steel rod in the middle. This is a young tree. It's growing vigorously. It will heal. So go ahead and do it. You got professional advice for free. Here to joining the same club as the nurseryman.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, Doug, good luck. We're going next to Joan. Where are you calling us from, Joan?
I'm from Linden.
Okay, go right ahead.
Ed gave one time advice on baking weeds in plastic, in dark plastic bags.
Yes.
And I have several bags filled with noxious weeds, and I was wondering how long should that process take?
Until they get mushy inside. So when they bake down in the sun, the heat that builds up, they don't just dry out because they're in a plastic bag. So they release the moisture, it sweats in there, and they start to actually rot and break down. Now,
I can hardly understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Could you speak up just a little?
Sure. Be patient. Let them rot in the bag. And after they've rotted down in the bag, you can put them into the compost down under so that they continue the rot process. But
okay.
Do cover them over.
And then what do you do with them again when they're all mushy?
When they're all mushy, you put them in the compost, mix them in, and
then it's okay.
And it's okay.
Okay, Mike, you're next. You're in Guelph. Go right ahead. What are you calling about?
Hi, Ed. I didn't really call about neem tree oil, but I have lived with neem trees in my yard for a dozen years in Guyana.
Oh.
And one of the active properties of neem is that it's an antifeedant, as well as an insecticide.
Yes, yes. So it discourages them from eating once they've taken some on. Now, do people take it for the same reason?
Yeah, it's used medicinally in Guyana for people and animals, and we would boil up every part of the tree from the root to the berries is antifeedant and insecticide. And we would boil up, the berries are strongest, and we would boil up the berries and dilute that and spray our garden pests with it.
Hmm.
Wow.
You must be interested then in the ongoing discussion here about neem oil in gardens, eh?
Well, I thought I could just add that little item of it being an antifeedant.
Yeah, okay. And what's your question?
You'd
actually called about a mock orange, I think?
Yeah, we bought an older house in Guelph last fall, so we're having fun seeing what pops out of the ground. And one of our problem children is a neglected mock orange tree, and it's fully 15 feet high, very tall and sprangly, to the point where now it's loaded with flowers, branches are breaking off just with the weight of the flower.
Yes.
And the advice on the internet is to trim back the top one-third and then get some of the dead wood out of the trunk, which is about 20, you know, inch and a half, 2-inch stems.
Yeah, that's one way of doing the rejuvenation. And if it's getting so top heavy that it's splitting out or breaking branches, probably good advice. Go try and keep it to 25% instead of one-third. Most people go over the 25%. I'd rather see you with a bit of a cushion there, but keep it to 25%. Trim out the worst that are going to be stressed out. Where they are close together and supporting one another, leave them for now. Next year, what I'd like to see you do is in this rejuvenation process, after the flowering, you go in and you take one out of every four of the largest branches. Now, if the biggest one is in the center, and I've been through this with mock orange, Rita, it's tough getting in there sometimes. If the largest ones are in the center, leave them for another year. Cut your way from the outside in so you can get to them the next time, but one out of every four. So there's your 25%. Remove them completely. It will stimulate new growth from the bottom. By the time you finished, you've got four-year-old stems coming up, and they're flowering again for you, so you don't lose everything. And the older ones, of course, keep flowering through the process. Do trim the top back about 25% this year, and then do the removal after. We want to rejuvenate this. We don't want to lose it.
Oh, no kidding. The mock oranges, what a beautiful scent.
Isn't that a scent?
Oh,
yeah.
I have the little shrubs even, and they look scraggly, but oh, this time of year, like the smell really, they're not beautiful looking shrub. Maybe you can. Well.
My sister Carol, it's her favorite flower in the whole world.
Is that right?
That's
eh?
It. Yeah,
oh,
that
beautiful.
Scent, yeah.
It is lovely. Andrew, you're next. You're in Milton. Ed Lawrence is all yours for a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
Well, thanks very much. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon.
So we had two Austrian pines in our back garden when we moved into this house a couple years ago. We lost both of those and had them removed. And then on the advice of a local nursery, we planted a downy service berry to sort of fill in the privacy gap along our fence line.
Okay.
And that was planted in November 2014. So we've had this tree for about 2.5 years. Last summer, it had sort of minimal growth of, you know, some leaves, but it wasn't by any stretch lush. This spring, it seems to have buds, but no leaves.
Oh, dear.
Now, it had one of those trunk guards on it, I think, to keep the rabbits from chewing on the trunk.
Okay.
Which we recently removed to find there is some green shoots coming out from the very base of the trunk.
Okay, let them come back up. But your tree is suffering. I don't know, are you on sand in Milton?
It's clay.
Oh, well, that's unusual. Well, it would hold more moisture, except we haven't had the moisture. And
yeah.
Last year, early on, like, we went through these problems. Whenever there are drought problems, priority number one, all your trees and shrubs.
Yeah.
They're the biggest investment, the longest time to grow. They need to get watered. And this guy is obviously showing the signs of moisture stress. It's drying out. It's dying back. I cannot believe how quickly some things are reacting. Rita, yesterday, I waited a little too long in the day. At the end of the day, I had to do an emergency spray and soaking of my azaleas that just baked in that sun and that heat.
Okay, so for Andrew, it's water, water, water.
Water, water.
Okay. A reminder again at cbc.ca/OntarioToday, that gardening web chat is underway, and you're welcome to join that for the next half hour. I think we have time for one final call. Liz in Sault Ste. Marie, and I think you've got a question about your tomato plants. Go right ahead.
Yes, I do. I actually have one about carrots, too. But my tomato plants, the leaves are curling up, and then they're turning a little brown. And I've sprayed them with soap and water and baking soda and oil and water.
Okay, stop the spraying.
Okay,
stop the spraying. That hairy leaf doesn't want to get wet. The soap will penetrate. It'll do more burning on that leaf, and especially with the baking soda. Then what was happening? Now, what was happening is probably showing, again, some signs of the dryness and heat. If you're just getting browning on the edge and curling up, it's early for any anthracnose to be showing up on tomato plants. Soak them. Pick off anything that's affected now so that there's no chance of that infection spreading to the rest. Make sure you move your tomatoes to a new location next year, but soak them now. And if you can do just a top dressing, half an inch or so up and down the row with your own compost would be the ideal. That'll work as a mulch and help hold the moisture in for the tomatoes.
All right. Good luck to you, Liz. And again, if you want to hear more about neem oil, remember we talked at 12:30 with someone from Health Canada. I'm looking at the Twitter feed. One of our listeners saying, I learned living in Eastern Africa that the neem plant is called 40 plant for its 40 plus uses. So thank you all for your company. Ed Lawrence here on Monday.
I'll be back.
Gardening Web Chat continues tomorrow. Another dynamic debate, Walmart versus Visa. See how many directions that can go. You can pick your side over the lunch hour tomorrow. Until then, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.